This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan. The Sedition Act and the Communications and Multimedia Act have been weaponized once again, and a string of investigations and arrests have been taking place over the past week or so. Among those investigated are Dr. Jay Kumar of Parti Socialist Malaysia, writer Udaya Sankar, and S. Murugan of DAP, all of whom are investigated for social media posts. So what does this mean for freedom of speech in Malaysia? Joining me on the show today to discuss all of this is Brian Yap. He's a research consultant at Amnesty International Malaysia. Welcome to the show, Brian. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well. Thank you, Dashran, and to BFM for inviting us to speak on freedom of expression in Malaysia.
Let's get right into it. Let's start by talking about some of the recent investigations. Let's start with Dr. Jay Kumar. Police are investigating the PSM chairperson over a Facebook posting that demands the release of a farmer arrested in Perak last Friday. What can you tell us about this, Brian?
Well, I think this case is a clear example of how restrictions on freedom of expression is used to silence the public and protect elite interests. I think in this particular case, I think it relates to an ongoing legal battle between the Perak Development Corporation, PKNP, and farmers who have been working on the land for generations. I won't go into the details of the case, but I think the High Court had rejected basically the PKNP's application to do some work and tests on the site of dispute, pending conclusion of the case. So there's a court order. Yet, I think the authorities went ahead and therefore they faced resistance from the community. And as a result, one farmer was arrested. Dr. Jayakumar of the Socialist Party, PSM, he wrote something on Facebook demanding this farmer's release and alleging wrongdoing on the part of the authorities. So this upset the police, which quickly launched an investigation. Now, as a leader of a political party, a former MP, surely Dr. Jayakumar has a responsibility to speak out on an issue affecting his constituents, right? And yet now he's the target of police investigations. So this raises the question, I think, if this can happen to a public figure like him, what more ordinary folks who try to stand up for their rights?
Absolutely. Now, he's investigated under Section 505C of the Penal Code and Section 233 of the Communications and Multimedia Act for abuse of network facilities. What are these laws, and is this a case of the law being abused?
Well, Section 505C of the Penal Code deals with public incitement to commit a crime, which is what the police are alleging that Dr. Jayakumar has done, simply because he presented the facts of the case or incident as he saw it. Criticism of the authorities has been criminalized in this case, in a way. He's also investigated under Section 233 of the Communications and Multimedia Act, CMA, for abuse of network facilities. Now, Section 233 is this terrible, terrible law that Amnesty and many other civil society organizations have repeatedly called for its repeal. Section 233 basically has become the default law for policing content on the internet. The law defines the offense of improper use of network facilities, which includes content that is, and I quote the law, obscene, indecent, false, menacing, or offensive in character, end quote. Now, how do you define these things? It's excessively vague. And this excessively vague nature of the law has allowed it to be used from, everyone from the Name We, the musician, for a YouTube video in the past.
Right.
It's been used against 1MDB whistleblower website, Sarawak Report, and also random social media posts, criticizing politicians or enforcement authorities and so on. Obviously, one of the more famous cases was also activist Fahmi Reza. I think he was sentenced to a month's jail, and 30,000 ringgit fine for posting his now iconic clown caricature. Ultimately, upon appeal, it was reduced to a fine. But given the impossibility of monitoring the vast amount of information on the internet, enforcement of this law is inevitably going to be selective and therefore unjust.
Speaking of the Comms and Multimedia Act, writer Udayasankar was arrested for allegedly insulting Prophet Muhammad on a social media post. He has since been released, but what is Amnesty's stance on the arrest in the first place?
Well, I think our position on his Udayasankar's arrest is the same as all other similar action taken by the authorities. We view it as a violation of his constitutionally guaranteed rights. And we also view it as an attempt to instill fear in the people into people in Malaysia and silence us. You know, when someone is targeted for something they post on the internet, it doesn't just affect that particular individual. It instills a sense of fear in all of us. We have no opinion on what Udayasankar wrote specifically, because we're not the arbiter of, you know, opinion of what is right or wrong. You know, right. And then we don't think the government should be either. You know, what we do have a view on is this, you know, that, which is that everyone has a right to freedom of opinion and expression. And this right includes, you know, the freedom to hold opinions without any interference and to seek and receive and share information and ideas through any sort of media or any, you know, any sort of frontier. And the government's duty, which I think it often misunderstands, is not to police speech and determine what is acceptable or not. Rather, it is actually the opposite. It is to it has a duty to protect even, you know, expression of ideas that some might find deeply offensive, as long as these ideas and speech do not constitute incitement. You know, and we don't think in this particular case it does. So, you know, and freedom of expression applies to information ideas of all kinds. So even if it's something that's unpopular, it's not the government's role to determine that.
Right.
And, so, yeah.
Yeah. And do you, how exactly did he get released? Because initially there was some saying that he might be held up, you know, for more than 4 days and so on and so forth. But he got released after a day. How did he get released?
Well, thanks to the good work of his lawyer and also like civil society organizations like Swaram who were there, you know, the magistrate did not agree to the police request for a 4-day remand, and instead only gave a 1-day remand order, which, you know, then expired at the end of the day, and therefore he was released. So I think the magistrate probably saw some, was concerned by, you know, such a long remand over what is just a social media post. But of course, this does not mean that investigations are closed. It just means that he's not be allowed to be held for longer than that 1 day. Nor does it mean that he will not be charged in the future. It's just that, you know, the police cannot hold him for 4 days. So he and like many others who have faced similar investigations, you know, during the course of it, he had to surrender his phone and was also asked to give his passwords to social media accounts. So this is quite standard. And, you know, so while it remains to be seen whether he will be charged and what he has already gone through was unnecessary and a violation of his right to free expression. And again, you know, it serves as a chilling effect on society in general.
Now, the most baffling case involves S. Murugan of DAP, who has been detained under the Sedition Act for a Facebook post encouraging Indians not to vote for MIC. Brian, is this seditious? Don't we always see political parties telling people not to vote for one party or the other? Isn't that what politics in Malaysia is and has been for the longest time?
I think the definition of what is seditious has been stretched almost comically thin, I think. There's no way in anyone's right mind that a speech giving political commentary can be considered seditious. But I think this is just one example, you know, what happened to S. Murugan. It's just one example of a long history of the law being used very randomly. Last year, I remember, I think a youth activist, Sarah Erdina, for example, she was arrested to much uproar for posting her support on social media for the Black Flag movement, even though many, many others, you know, had done the same thing. You know, so why single her out? But the Sedition Act allows that, and this is how it's been used. Because it's overly broad and is led to often to like overreach and prone to abusive application. And I think, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about this later. But like, I think the purpose of all these actions usually is not to say that, you know, they want to arrest every single person. But I think that the purpose is if you arrest or take action against one individual, it will instill fear amongst the general public. And that, I think, is the purpose, often is the purpose of these the application of the Sedition Act and these other restrictive laws.
On that note, how do authorities decide who to investigate? Because when you're saying something like, okay, don't vote for MIC or don't vote for this party, don't vote for that party, these are things that every Tom, Dick and Harry says on social media all the time. Every single day you go on social media, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, people are talking like this. So how do the authorities decide who to investigate?
I think your guess is probably as good as mine in this case. I think as you said, and I agree, you know, it all does seem rather arbitrary. Now, this is, again, not to say that the government needs to do a better job and investigate every single critic, you know, like, and enforce some sort of like surveillance and make sure that, you know, everybody is equally arrested. But I think it also dispels this argument that that these features, you know, are some sort of threat to public order or morality. Because, you know, public order did not break down. Morality is still, you know, fine, even though, you know, many people have been saying, you know, expressing certain ideas. But yet, you know, so they would use that argument against a single individual because saying like, oh, you said this and therefore it is a threat to public order. But I think the argument breaks down when you really look at it. So I think, you know, as I said, you know, I think the authorities are aware of the impossibility of investigating everyone. So I think the message, the aim is probably more to send a message to the public and instill a sense of fear. It serves the purpose of telling people in Malaysia, you know, the government's watching you. Be careful about what you say online.
And what do these recent investigations, and this is just recent, you know, we've been faced with this month after month after month. You know, it's like you said, it's a long history. But what does it say about freedom of speech in the country? What does it signal?
Well, I think it's a sign that, you know, regardless of who is in power, the use of these laws will always be an issue, and these laws will always be used to silence Malaysians over, you know, any particular type of speech or any sort of like public criticism of the authorities. And so I think it shows that, you know, this administration is no different from previous administrations, and that I think the right move would be to actually reform and repeal some of these laws, so that no matter who is in power, that, you know, we will not be faced with these type of like arbitrary sort of investigations and harassment of not just activists or like human rights defenders or public figures. You know, a lot of times I think we ignore. Or we don't hear as much about, you know, people who, just ordinary folks who just post something maybe out of frustration about something that happened to them with the police. I think we saw that a lot during, like, you know, in lockdown, where, you know, some people were, you know, like saying they were upset about something and then they said some things about the police, about, you know, enforcement of the MCO rules and then so on. And they were investigated and some were actually convicted and charged and convicted by the court of law. So I think the ultimate goal is not to say that this particular administration is bad or whatever. It's just to, I think that these laws need to be reformed and repealed so that we will no longer have to deal with it, whoever is in power.
We'll talk more about that after the break. On the show with me today is Brian Yap, research consultant at Amnesty International Malaysia. After break, I'll be asking him about, you know, these laws, if they need to be abolished, and some arguments people have against freedom of speech and expression. Keep it here on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Brian Yap. He's a research consultant at Amnesty International Malaysia. And we're discussing the string of arrests and investigations that have been taking place over the past week for various social media posts. And what all of these investigations mean for freedom of speech, freedom of expression in this country. So, Brian, what exactly does the Malaysian Constitution say about freedom of speech and expression?
Well, Article 10 of the Federal Constitution says clearly that, you know, every citizen has the right to freedom of speech and expression, and all citizens have a right to assemble peaceably and without arms, and all citizens have a right to form associations. So I think that's a very fundamental and basic right for all. And, you know, the Malaysians are guaranteed these rights by the Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land. Yet, you know, we see a variety of laws denying Malaysians these fundamental rights. They continue to exist. And this is why we've often argued, like with many other civil society organizations, that these laws are unconstitutional. And, you know, it's unfortunate that the government continues to use them despite this fact, because they only serve to create a climate of fear and they only serve to silence our voices.
You know, while the Constitution does bring enshrine freedom of speech and expression in a broad manner, right? But we also know that Article 10 of the Federal Constitution does pose some limitations in its sub-clauses. Can you tell us about these clauses and instances in which freedom of speech can be restricted?
Sure. I think there's some of the sub-clauses you're referring to include, I think, the right of Parliament to impose laws that, you know, in the interest of, say, the security of the Federation, right, or, you know, protecting friendly relations with other countries. Again, that frequently used phrase, you know, public order and morality. And these restrictions, Parliament can make laws to protect these things. But our view, I think, is that these exemptions should be used in very, very specific and limited circumstances, right? So, yes, you are allowed to do all these things, but they should be very, very specific and limited and not arbitrarily used and not with the alarming regularity as it has been. You know, like the example of the DAP politician, you know, asking people not to vote for MIC. That's a clear example of this idea being abused. You know, how can that be any sort of public threat to public order or morality? It should not be, you know, applied in that such a way. And the government cannot claim that, you know, every unpopular opinion, you know, threatens public order, right, or morality, for instance. You know, surely our society is not that fragile.
You know, on that note, what would you say to people who argue that, you know, without these laws, we're talking about sedition, we're talking about, you know, Communications and Multimedia Act, there would be nothing to curb hate speech? You know, there are people who will bring up the argument and say, okay, then everybody is just going to write whatever they want about Islam, for example, or any religion, and so on and so forth. How would you respond to these arguments?
I think the term hate speech gets thrown around very easily these days. But there is a clear definition, and I think this can be found in Article 20 of the ICCPR, the International Convention on Civil and Political Rights. And it refers to sort of, and I quote, you know, advocacy of national, racial, or religious hatred that constitutes incitement to discrimination, hostility, or violence. So it's very specific. There has to be some element of, you know, inciting people to do something bad as well. You know, advocacy of hatred is more than just, you know, the expression of a certain idea or an opinion that is hateful towards members of a particular group. It requires some sort of clear showing of intent to incite others to discriminate or be hostile towards others or commit violence in particular. And I understand, you know, hate speech is a broad concept, you know, I think with different meaning for different people. But unfortunately, I think sometimes governments use this vaguely defined definition, quote unquote, hate speech laws to restrict expression unfairly.
Right.
So, you know, I think as a society, there will always be unpleasant speech around us. What more in this day of like the internet and so on? But this does not necessarily mean that the government has to take action against every single speech. So again, you know, I think any sort of restrictions on freedom of expression must be clearly and precisely defined to avoid abuse. And I think this is not the case with a lot of our laws that restrict freedom of expression. They're very vague and very general. And this is why they're often prone to abuse and selective prosecution, I think. Yeah.
You know, like you said, our constitution enshrines free speech. Every Malaysian has that right, as you know, mentioned in the constitution. Then why is it That throughout the years, we constantly see people getting probed or investigated, or just speaking out their mind or sharing their thoughts and so on and so forth. Even when people do peaceful assemblies and things like that, we've seen like police investigating protesters, for example. We've even seen it over the past couple of years. How does it happen? How have we allowed this to happen? And why does it keep happening if it says very clearly in the Constitution that all of these things are allowed?
Well, I think censorship and restrictions on freedom of expression have been with us even before independence, you know. So none of this is actually new, really. Right. And I think this is partly, you know, what Amnesty International Malaysia, we've aimed to highlight on our campaign and website we call Unsilenced. And this campaign, and it features its own website, which looks at the history of censorship in this country. I think the Sedition Act, which we've been talking about, you know, was introduced in 1948
right.
by the colonial British government,
right.
you know, to silence growing opposition to the colonial rule. So it's quite ironic that it is still being used today, more than 60, however many years later,
right.
In a country that has been independent for such a long time, and to silence, you know, people today. So I think these investigations, arrests, prosecutions, and even in some cases convictions of people for their speech are sort of evidence of a government that does not respect the rights of people in Malaysia, as mentioned, as guaranteed under the Constitution. You know, whether it's as a means to silence criticism or impose some form of control over society, I think our governments in the past and present have abused its powers, you know, in the interest of sort of, I think, both expediency and also self-interest. Yeah.
You know, with all of that in mind, what should we do moving forward? How can we open our democratic space even more? How can we protect freedom of speech in the country? Do these laws need to be abolished?
Well, for Amnesty International Malaysia, I think one of our core campaigns has been for these laws that violate constitutionally guaranteed freedoms, freedom of expression, to be repealed. So for us, yes, they should be repealed. These laws need to be abolished, or at least at the very least amended to be very specific in what it restricts, as I was talking about earlier. Of course, now there are many, many laws that do restrict freedom of expression. So it's a really long list. But for us, I think our focus as part of our Unsilenced campaign is actually on the most egregious and widely used. So we picked four laws that we hope that the government will review and look at, namely the Sedition Act, Section 233 of the CMA, the Film Censorship Act, and finally, the Printing Presses and Publication Act. So these four laws. So we have an ongoing campaign on our website for people to sign a petition calling on the government to repeal these laws. So we urge your listeners to visit our website and to learn more about the history of censorship in Malaysia, the different laws that govern it, and also sign the petition.
Absolutely. Now, Brian, why is there a lack of political will to abolish this? Because like you said, this isn't something new. Civil society organizations from Swaram to Amnesty to everything, you know, all civil society organizations have been pushing for this. Journalists, the media have been pushing for this for decades now. But nothing has been done to make any meaningful changes when it comes to these laws. And, you know, there was a sense of hope when there was a change of government in 2018 that, okay, finally now all of these laws are going to be gone, and there will be massive reforms, at least in these areas. But, you know, even while Pakatan Harapan campaigned and said that, you know, all these laws would be gone, when they came into power, the Sedition Act was even used during Pakatan Harapan's time. So why is there a lack of political will to abolish these laws or at least revamp them, reform them?
Yeah, it's almost as if, I think for people of a certain age, a little bit older, I think they'll remember the ISA as this all-powerful, and
right.
the Internal Security Act as this all-powerful law that you say anything wrong about the government, you know, you'll get mysteriously thrown somewhere and disappear for like 2 years. So, you know, and yet, you know, even after that law was taken away, the government found some other means, other laws that to use to sort of still create that climate of fear. I think ultimately, I think when you're in power, it's very tempting to take the easy way out to solve issues, you know, to use these laws that are already there to silence your critics, or even if you want to give the government the benefit of the doubt, to use these laws to sort of resolve resolve societal issues, by telling people to calm down and be quiet about it's a particularly sensitive issue. But ultimately, I think, you know, you don't really solve anything by silencing people. You don't really resolve any issues. So I think, you know, unfortunately, we haven't seen the type of political leadership that we need to take this view, you know, that ultimately, you know, that silencing people, censoring people, arresting people for saying something does not really change anything ultimately. But, you know, it's tempting and it's the easy way when you're under pressure in the government. I think it's just like, all right, what's the easiest way to solve something, or at least appear to solve something? And that is by making people, telling people to shut up and keep quiet. So I suppose that's probably the reason why.
All right. Before we wrap this conversation up, Brian, would you have a final message for us? And also something to perhaps give people to think about? Because if these things are not being abolished, what can people do? What can people do to, you know, push for the abolition of, you know, such draconian laws?
I think for our message to the government, I think the authorities obviously would be to stop harassing, investigating and prosecuting people for exercising their right to freedom of expression. I think that is our message to the government, plain and simple. And obviously we also call on the Prime Minister and the Cabinet and the government in general to again start efforts for reform in terms of freedom of expression and human rights in general, which I think, as we all have seen, you know, has stalled in the past few years because everyone's just been so distracted by, you know, political maneuvering and all that kind of thing. But it's time to start making reforms again. And so this can be, you know, by, you know, reviewing, you know, with the intention to abolish and repeal laws like the Sedition Act, the 233 of the CMA, and so on. And I think for listeners out there, I think, you know, I want to give a plug to our website, unsilenced.amnesty.my. Do visit that to not only sign a petition, but also like get an understanding of the different examples of censorship that has happened in this country. And I think we use a lot of sort of pop culture elements to show that it's not just, you know, political speech, but sometimes, you know, even like your movies and entertainment, your pop songs are also victims of these violations of freedom of expression. So hopefully the people can do that. But I think ultimately, you know, I think people need to not be afraid to speak their mind, not be afraid, not to be cowed by these attempts to instill and create a climate of fear, and continue to exercise their freedom of expression. Because ultimately, I think, you know, without this freedom of expression, I think society would, you know, would be bereft of many like ideas and conversations that we need to have and so on. So I think ultimately to people out there, do not be afraid. Continue to speak your mind.
On that note, thank you so much for speaking with me today, Brian.
Thank you very much, Nashan.
That was Brian Yap. He's a research consultant at Amnesty International Malaysia. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can check us out on podcasts. We're available on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashan Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.